Brother Gary has asked that we read from the third chapter of Nehemiah, and remember there will be a quiz, so pay attention. Eliashib, the high priest, and his fellow priest went to work and rebuilt the sheep gate. They dedicated it and set its doors in place, building as far as the Tower of the Hundred, which they dedicated, and as far as the Tower of Hananeel. The men of Jericho built the adjoining section, and Zakur, the son of Imri, built next to them. The fish gate was rebuilt by the sons of Hasaniah. They laid its beams and put on its doors and bolts and bars in place. Merimoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hazcok, which I mispronounced, cause, repaired the next section. Next to him, Meshulaman, the son of Berechiah, the son of Meshezabel, made repairs, and next to him, Zadok, the son of Bena, also made repairs. The next section was repaired by the men of Tekoa, but their nobles would not put their shoulders to the work under their supervisors. The Jeshana gate was repaired by Joiada, the son of Paseah, and Meshulman, of the son of Besodiah. They laid its beams and put its doors and bolts and bars in place, and next to them, the repairs were made by the men from Gibeon and Mizpah. Melatiah of Gibeon and Jadon of Meron-Oth, places under authority of the governor of Trans-Euphrates, Uzziel, the son of Harhiah, one of the goldsmiths, repaired the next section. And Hananiah, one of the perfume makers, made repairs next to that. They restored Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. Rephahiah, son of Hur, ruler of the half-district of Jerusalem, repaired the next section. Adjoining this, Jediah, the son of Harumuf, it's not easy to say, and I may have missed it, made repairs opposite his house. And Hattush, the son of Hashabaniah, made repairs next to him. Melchijah, the son of Harim, and Hashab, the son of Pathath Moab, repaired another section and the Tower of the Ovens. Shalom, the son of Halohesh, ruler of the half-district of Jerusalem, repaired the next section with help from his daughters. The valley gate was repaired by Hanum and the residents of Zanoah. They built it and put its doors and bolts and bars in place. They also repaired 500 yards of the wall as far as the dung gate. The dung gate was repaired by Melchijah, the son of Rechab, ruler of the district of Beth Hakarim. He rebuilt it and put its doors and bolts and bars in place. The fountain gate was repaired by Shalom, the son of Koz Hoza, ruler of the district of Mizpah. He rebuilt it, roofing it over and putting its doors and bolts and bars in place. He also repaired the wall of the pool of Siloam by the king's garden, as far as the steps going down from the city of David. Beyond him, Nehemiah, the son of Azbuk, ruler of the half-district of Beth-Zur, made repairs to the point opposite the tombs of David as far as the artificial pool and the house of the heroes. Next to him, the repairs were made by the Levites under Rehum, the son of Hanai, and beside him, Hashabiah, ruler of half the district of Keilah, carried out the repairs for his district. Next to him, the repairs were made by their countrymen under Binui, the son of Henadad, ruler of the half-district of Keilah. Next to him, Ezer, the son of Jeshua, ruler of Mizpah, repaired another section from the point facing the ascent to the armory as far as the angle. Next to him, Baruch, the son of Zabai, zealously repaired another section from the angle to the entrance of the house of Eliashib, the high priest. Next to him, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hakkoz, repaired another section from the entrance of Eliashib's house to the end of it. The repairs next to him were made by the priests from the surrounding region. Beyond them, Benjamin and Hashub made repairs in front of their house, and next to them, Azariah, the son of Maaseiah, the son of Ananiah, made repairs beside his house next to him. Benui, the son of Henadad, repaired another section from Azariah's house to the angle of the corner and the corner. And Palal, the son of Uzai, worked opposite the angle and the tower, projecting it from the upper palace near the court of the guard. Next to him, Pedaiah, the son of Parosh, and the temple servants living on the hill of Ophel made repairs to a point opposite the water gate toward the east and the projecting tower. Next to them, the man of Tekoa repaired another section from the great projecting tower to the wall of Ophel. Above the horse gate, the priests made repairs, each in front of his own house. Next to them, Zadok, the son of Immer, made repairs opposite his house. Next to him, Shemaiah, the son of Shechaniah, the guard at the east gate, made repairs. Next to him, Hananiah, the son of Shemaiah, and Hanan, the sixth son of Zaloph, repaired another section. Next to them, Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, made repairs opposite his living quarters. Next to him, Malchijah, one of the goldsmiths, made repair as far as the house of the temple servants and the merchants, opposite the inspection gate, and as far as the room above the corner, and between the room above the corner and the sheep gate, the goldsmiths and the merchants made repairs. Brother Gary, class number 3.
Okay, so in our last class, we laid the foundation for Nehemiah chapter 3, and we talked a lot in our last class about the job of a mason. And I was going to do this class tomorrow morning, but I consulted with my wife, and she said that there's some that are probably not going to be here tomorrow. So for continuity, we're going to do the class that we were going to do for Sunday school now, which is go through Nehemiah chapter 3, and it really builds upon that foundation of the work of a mason. And in Nehemiah chapter 3, what we have is the list of all the masons that worked, if you will, on the wall of Jerusalem. So let's look at Nehemiah chapter 3. Thank you for reading that chapter. I know it's not easy reading all those names, but there's a purpose behind why we went through and read the chapter with all the names in it. And we'll talk about that as we go through this class. So, first of all, notice as we go through Nehemiah chapter 3 that, and I believe, and we're going to talk about this tomorrow morning, I believe that the plan to work on the wall and how people, and you might want to take out your handout for Nehemiah chapter 3. We're going to be using that in this class. But I believe that the plan as to who worked on what sections of the wall was done in Nehemiah chapter 2. And when Nehemiah journeyed around the wall, I believe that what he was doing when he journeyed around the wall, when he arrived at Jerusalem, and he did it in secrecy, what he was doing as he journeyed around the wall was developing the plan that we see executed here in Nehemiah chapter 3. And so when we come to Nehemiah chapter 3, notice here that he delegates authority. He says, "You will work on this section of the wall from here to here." And then the next person, he says, you're going to pick up where that person left off, and you're going to work from there over to here. And then so on and so forth, all the way around the wall. And you'll notice as you go around the wall that some people are given smaller sections and some people are given larger sections. Some parts of the wall required more work than others. Some parts of the wall had more rubble to remove before they could start building than other parts of the wall did. But the work for the rebuilding of the wall, it was delegated to the people in Jerusalem, to the masons of the ecclesia, if you will, and they were assigned a section of the wall to work on. There was no 80-20 rule in the building of the wall of Jerusalem where 20% of the people do 80% of the work. You know, and when you look at our ecclesia, and I look at the Cambridge Ecclesia. When there's something to be done in the Ecclesia, in Cambridge, usually there's an announcement from the platform. Is there anybody that would like to volunteer to do this? If you would like to volunteer to do this, please see the recording brother or whatever, right? And then there's no volunteers. And then it's asked another week and another week after that, right? We got to stop doing that in the Ecclesia. That's not what Nehemiah didn't go and say, who wants to volunteer to build the wall? Nobody was going to step up to build the wall. Nobody was going to volunteer to do that. We've got to look at the talents and the abilities of the people in the ecclesia, and we've got to assign them. We've got to approach them. We've got to invite them. We've got to invoke them to work on the building of the wall. Because when we ask for volunteers in the ecclesia, we just set up the ecclesia for bystander apathy. Well, I'm not going to put my, I want to be asked. And then finally, when we assign the jobs, they need to be really assigned and delegated, and authority needs to be delegated to those people so that if you're working on this section of the wall and I'm assigning you to work on this section of the wall, I'm going to accept the work that you do as the best that you can possibly do for the building of the wall. And I'm not going to sit there and say, well, you know, if that stone was moved this way, and you put that stone that way, you know, it might look a little better. And that's the way I'd probably do it. Because that's what we tend to do, isn't it? In the ecclesia. And when we assign somebody a job, we say, would you please do this? And then they go and do it. And then we start pointing our fingers and saying, well, that's not the way, that's not the color I would have chosen. Why did you put that there? I would have put that over there. Are they going to want to do it again? And so when Nehemiah assigns them the work of the wall, he assigns them a section of the wall, and they're responsible to build that section of the wall in whatever way they best see fit, given the instruction that Nehemiah gave him. Jobs and tasks in the ecclesia need to be accepted when they're completed as the way they are. Might not be the way we've done it, or the way we would have done it, but we need to accept the work of everybody in the ecclesia. And everybody in the ecclesia needs to have a task. Everyone in the ecclesia needs the satisfaction of feeling that they're contributing in some capacity to the building of the wall. They need to feel engaged. Everybody needs to be assigned a section of the wall. And really, that's the job of arranging brethren, isn't it, in terms of the spiritual development of the ecclesia. To make sure that everybody in the ecclesia and everybody's talents and abilities are being used to their utmost to build each other up and to make sure that the wall of the ecclesia continues to be built. And everybody needs to have a vested interest in the building of the wall. And it doesn't matter what that task is. It doesn't matter if it's painting the wall, laying carpet, if it's speaking from the platform, if it's presiding, if it's preparing meals, if it's for playing the organ, if it's for phoning somebody up midweek. Whatever that case may be, there needs to be a job. There needs to be a task. There needs to be an assignment given to every member of the ecclesia. And they need to feel like they have ownership for that task, and ownership to see that job through to completion so that that wall might continue to be built. Nobody in the ecclesia is exempt. And it doesn't matter what our occupation is outside of the ecclesia. Doesn't matter what we do. Doesn't matter, you know, if we're a caretaker or we're a production worker or a manufacturer or a vice president or a CEO. It makes no difference who we are outside of the ecclesia. When we enter through the doors of the ecclesia, it makes no difference. All of these individuals, all of these individuals, priests, there were people who commuted, goldsmiths, apothecaries, city officials or rulers, women, the temple servants, the city guard, and the merchants, all of them became masons. And as soon as we go through the door of the ecclesia, we're all masons. There's no job that's more important than another. There's no mason that is more important than any other mason in the ecclesia. We all become masons, and we all are responsible to build the wall of the ecclesia. Sometimes there's non-contributors. If you look at verse 5 of Nehemiah chapter 3, and next unto them, the Tekoites repaired, but their nobles put not their necks to the work of their Lord. And you know, there's probably a few nobles of Tekoa in every ecclesia. We all are nobles of Tekoa at one point or another. That's where we sit back and we're not really willing to do the work ourselves. We're not really jumping up and pitching in to do the work, but we're very happy to sit back and be a critic. We're very happy to sit back and say, well, you know, I don't really think that's the right way that job should have been done. We're very happy to sit back and critique the work that was done. And be very critical of the brother or the sister that performed the work. But we're not willing to do it ourselves. Sometimes we all have that attitude, don't we? Like a noble of Tekoa. It's a coordinated effort. Jobs were assigned strategically. There were no gaps in the wall. Each picked up where the other left off, and many were assigned portions close to home, which they would have a vested interest in, right? Each individual ecclesia must develop a plan to ensure that its light is dependent on every member and not a select few. We've already touched on that. Ephesians chapter 4 says, he gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors, some teachers. So the different talents and abilities for what? For the work of the ministry. 1 Corinthians 12 says, the body is not one member but many, and those which seem to be more feeble are the most necessary. So it's not necessarily the brother that's standing up here on the platform. It's not the recording brother. It's not the sister that's playing the organ in front of the ecclesia. A lot of times it's that brother or sister that are working behind the scenes that are the backbone of the ecclesia that are the most important, although they may not be the most visible. We're going to see that with some of the people in Nehemiah chapter 3. So, before you take out your diagram, one other thing you'll notice in Nehemiah chapter 3 is dedication and determination overcome distance and distraction. If you'll notice that there's a number of individuals who didn't dwell specifically at Jerusalem. There are those from Mizpah in verse 7, 15, and 19, who Mizpah is about 7 miles from Jerusalem. There's some from Jericho, which is 16 miles from Jerusalem. Beth Zur, which is 18 miles from Jerusalem. Zenoa, which is 17 miles. Keilah, Gibeon, which is 6 miles. And Tekoa, which is about 15 miles from Jerusalem. There are all those individuals that came to Jerusalem to work on the wall. And it's not like they were jumping in their air-conditioned Lexuses to drive to Jerusalem, were they? I mean, 16 miles or 17 or 18 miles from Jerusalem, that's a day's journey. That's a hard journey to Jerusalem. And in Nehemiah, we find that as they were walking to Jerusalem, the neighbors were taunting them and they were threatening them on their way back to Jerusalem. But there they were, still getting to Jerusalem and fulfilling their obligation to build that section of the wall. We can't really let distance distract us from ecclesial obligation, can we, in our day and age? So take out your your diagram there of the wall. And in Nehemiah chapter 3, this is how he works. So in Nehemiah chapter 3, and there at verse 1, we have Eliashib working at the top of the city of Jerusalem, the north end here at the Tower of Mia. Eliashib is working in verse 1. Now, as we go through Nehemiah chapter 3, he is going counterclockwise around the city of Jerusalem, and he comes back up to the top. So he's following counterclockwise, and he's dividing the wall up into certain sections. And you'll see on your diagram, as we've mentioned before, that some sections of the wall required more work than others, and there was a large group of people who were working on that section of the wall. Some sections of the wall required only one or two individuals to work on that section of the wall. Some of the towers required more work and more people to perform the work and complete it. But as he goes around the city of Jerusalem, he picks up where each group is assigned a task, and each group picks up where the other left off so that there's no section of the wall that is left as a gap. And when they're done in 52 days, the wall is complete and there's no holes or no weaknesses left in the wall. And that's the type of strategy that we in our ecclesia need to develop for those members of our ecclesia in the building of the wall. We've got to make sure that all of the needs of the ecclesia are met by each individual or group within the ecclesia so that there are no gaps left in that wall. And we've got to work together so that where one person leaves off, the other picks up and carries on. And he assigns, I believe, sections of the wall based on the talents and the abilities of the people that were there in Jerusalem to do the work. And that's the type of strategy that we need to apply to our ecclesia in ecclesial life to make sure that we're building the wall and we build it whole and complete and it stands firm and there are no gaps or holes in the wall. So let's go then to Nehemiah chapter 3. You're just going to have to a bit of a commercial interlude here. I'm going to have to switch my... Okay. So in Nehemiah chapter 3, we have here an example of teamwork, right? Everybody working together, everybody supporting one another, everybody encouraging one another to complete the work of the wall. And in Nehemiah chapter 3, we have, as we had read, simply what appears to be on a surface reading, a list of names. And I mentioned earlier that it's not just a list of names. Every individual in Nehemiah chapter 3 that's mentioned there in Nehemiah chapter 3 has a story behind them. Some are positive and some are negative. But every individual in Nehemiah chapter 3 has a story behind them. Everyone in our ecclesia has a story to tell. Do we know the story behind every individual in the ecclesia that is helping to build the wall? That's the challenge that we have, isn't it? It's not good enough to just show up at the ecclesia 5 minutes after the meeting starts, leave 5 minutes before it ends. Because we never get to know the story behind each mason in the ecclesia. So let's look at some of the stories of the people in Nehemiah chapter 3. Verse 1. Eliashib. Now you would think that Eliashib, being the high priest, would be one of the ones that were setting a positive example as a role model in the ecclesia for others to follow. You see Eliashib in verse 1 as the high priest. And you think, yes, there he is at the north end of Jerusalem, building the wall just like everybody else. What a great role model. What a great example. Not necessarily true. I've said here that Eliashib is like the seed that fell on stony ground. I don't know if this one will work or not. The other. Not sure where the other pointer went. Oh, there we go. I said that he's like the seed that fell on stony ground. Remember the seed that fell on stony ground? Seed went in, had no depth of soil, sprung up, and then withered away and died. That's Eliashib. Let me show you what I mean. He was building the wall, it appears in verse 1, but I would suggest to you that he wasn't building it because he had a passion for the ecclesia. That he had a passion for Jerusalem and for the development of the people. And I say that because of this. If you turn to Nehemiah chapter 13, who was he allied to? Verse 4. And before this, Eliashib, the priest, having the oversight of the chamber of the house of our God, was allied unto Tobiah. So he was allied unto Tobiah. His grandson, if you look at verse 28 of Nehemiah 13, one of the sons of Jehoiada, the son of Eliashib, the high priest, was son-in-law to Sanballat the Horonite. Therefore, I chased him from me. And so his grandson was married to the daughter of Sanballat. What does that tell you about how he ordered his family? He was an individual who had one foot in the truth and one foot out. He wanted the best of both worlds. He wanted his cake and wanted to eat it too. But the Bible is very clear, isn't it? You cannot serve God and mammon. If you look at Nehemiah chapter 3, what do we find out about the rest of the priests? If you look at verse 28 of Nehemiah chapter 3, it says, from above the horse gate repaired the priests, every one over against his house. So all the priests from the horse gate repaired the wall over against their own house. Who was the only priest that didn't do that? It was Eliashib. Look what it says in verse 21. After him repaired Meremoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Cuz, another piece from the door of the house of Eliashib, even to the end of the house of Eliashib. So Eliashib was one of the priests, probably the only one, that never repaired the section of the wall that was next to his house, like all the other priests did. And so initially, when we read Nehemiah chapter 3, we think, oh, that's Eliashib. Look at him building that section of the wall next to the gate at the north end of the city. What a great man that Eliashib is, until you know the story behind him. And then you see that Eliashib is only working on the wall for outward appearances. He doesn't really have a vested interest in the building of the wall and the development of the ecclesia. He has his own interests at heart, and he is allied unto Tobiah and is creating political alliances with Tobiah because it's going to benefit who? Benefit himself. So it's not necessarily as it appears on the surface in Nehemiah chapter 3, is it? Look at Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 2. Now we've already talked about these individuals. Next unto him builded the men of Jericho. And next unto them builded Zachar, the son of Imri. Now the men of Jericho, if you'll remember, Jericho was 17 miles away. You know, they didn't have their Ferraris and their Lamborghinis to scoot down to Jerusalem and build the wall and then scoot back home again and do their chores, did they? You look at the men of Jericho and all those who commuted, they had this distance to travel, and we don't know how long they were there. Maybe they were there for the full 52 days. We don't know if they even went home to see their families. Maybe they brought all their families with them, and their families were helping to work on the wall. But what kind of dedication is that, where you're traveling 18 miles to help build the wall of Jerusalem, and some of them probably would have been there for the whole 52 days, working straight day after day to build the wall of Jerusalem? And do we have that same dedication? Or when it gets a little bit too cold, and back home when there's a little snow on the ground, do we phone up and say, I think we should cancel meeting because there's a little snow on the ground? You know, it's a little bit too cold. And sometimes that happens, and sometimes, believe me, when we get 2 feet of snow, you know, it's the right decision to make. But nevertheless, under normal circumstances, we don't have that excuse, do we? We don't have the excuse that distance should deter us from working in the ecclesia. Let's go down to verse 4. What about this individual here, Merimoth? What's the story behind him? And next unto them repaired Merimoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Cuz. So it doesn't say too much about him there in verse 4, does it? But what was Merimoth's job? Well, I would suggest to you, and we have here, this is a positive story. He's dedicated, focused, and he's absolutely reliable in the work of the ecclesia. He was a priest. He was known for being meticulous and consistent, and he was a model of integrity and trustworthiness in the ecclesia. Turn back to Ezra chapter 8. If you go back to Ezra chapter 8, reading there at verse 33. Here we see Merimoth. Now on the fourth day was the silver and the gold and the vessels weighed in the house of our God by the hand of Merimoth, the son of Uriah, the priest. And with him was Eleazar, the son of Phinehas, and with them was Jozabad, the son of Jeshua, and Noadiah, the son of Binnai, Levites. And so here was this individual Merimoth, whose job was to weigh out the gold and the silver and the precious things in the temple. Absolutely a position that had to be meticulous, had to be somebody that you could trust, and somebody that had a great deal of integrity. And that was Merimoth. And in chapter 12 and verse 3, and we're not going to go there, but in chapter 12 verse 3, he returned with Zerubbabel back to Jerusalem. In chapter 10, when all those who sealed the covenant, was Merimoth one of those ones who signed up and sealed the covenant in chapter 10? Absolutely he was in verse 5. And if you come back to Nehemiah chapter 3, he didn't just repair one section of the wall, did he? Remember this man Eliashib, who failed to build the wall that was by his house like all the other priests did? Who filled in the gap? Who's the one that entered in and helped and filled up the gap in the wall, or build that, rebuild the wall in that section that Eliashib failed to do? It was Merimoth. Look at verse 21. We already read it, but in verse 21 it says, "And after him repaired Merimoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Cuz, another piece, from the door of the house of Eliashib, even unto the end of the house of Eliashib." And so even though Eliashib failed to complete his job and failed to fill or build that section of the wall, there was this man Merimoth, meticulous, trustworthy, a man of integrity, that wasn't just doing a job and doing it right, but he was also looking for where there were gaps in the ecclesial wall. And he was willing to jump in and fill in that gap and fill in the duty that wasn't being done. And that's the type of person we need to be in the ecclesia. We need to be looking for the gaps. And we need to be jumping in and taking that opportunity to serve the ecclesia and make sure that the wall of the ecclesia and the integrity of that wall is intact. And that's what Merimoth was doing in Nehemiah chapter 3. So what do we know about this man, Meshullam? So in Nehemiah chapter 3, reading there at verse 4. So next to Merimoth, it says, "Next unto them repaired Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, the son of Meshezabeel." So again in Nehemiah chapter 3, not a lot said about Meshullam. Now, it does say in Nehemiah chapter 3, if you turn to verse 30, that he also repaired a second section of the wall. After him repaired Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, and Hanan, the sixth son of Zalaph, another piece. After him repaired Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, over against his chamber. And so Meshullam actually repaired two sections of the wall, and you think, yes, he's just like Meremoth. There he is jumping in, filling in the gap in the ecclesial wall, and he's building a second section. Right on, go Meshullam, right? And then you see, if you turn to Nehemiah chapter 8 and verse 4, and in Nehemiah chapter 8 we have the reading of the law, right? And Ezra gets up and he reads the law in front of all the people. And beside Ezra there was a group of people, verse 4. Ezra the scribe stood upon a pulpit of wood which they had made for the purpose, and beside him stood Mattathiah, Shema, Ananiah, Urijah, Hilkiah, Maaseiah on his right, on his left, Pediah, Mishael, Malchiah, Hashem, Hashbadana, Zechariah, and Meshullam. So there you go. Yes, Meshullam, he's there reading the law with Ezra. What a spiritual leader within the community, right? Over in chapter 10, and we're not going to look it up, but in chapter 10, verse 7, it says he was one of the ones that sealed the covenant. And you think, yes, what a great man this man Meshullam was, that he sealed the covenant. But now turn over to Nehemiah chapter 6. Verse 17. Moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters unto Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came unto them. For there were many in Judah sworn unto him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara, and his son Johanan had taken the daughter of Meshullam, the son of Berechiah. Also they reported his good deeds before me and uttered my words to him, and Tobiah sent letters to put me in fear. And so, yes, on the surface, he was doing all the right things, right? He was up there reading the law. He was building two sections of the wall. He signed on and he sealed the covenant. Yet in behind the scenes, what was he doing? He was reporting all the good deeds of Tobiah to Nehemiah. And he had these political alliances, and it was his daughter who married into those political alliances. So, Meshullam, although looking to be a spiritual individual on the surface, appears underneath to have a double-minded sort of approach to ecclesial life. Now, we're running a little short on time here. So, the Tekoites we've already talked about. In verse 5, notice there with the Tekoites, the commoners actually perform the work. The nobles are the ones that watch the work, right? And we won't say too much about that other than to say that the nobles, or the commoners, actually built two sections of the wall. If you look at verse 27 of Nehemiah chapter 3 says, after them the Tekoites repaired another piece over against the great tower that lieth out, even unto the wall of Ophel. So they repair their first piece in verse 5, and they repair their second piece in verse 27. And yet there's the nobles who sit back and watch the work. And is it any wonder why it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 26 that it's not many noble are called? The word noble actually means, if you look at the original Hebrew means majestic or magnificent one, according to Gesenius, right? The majestic or the magnificent one. So it's no wonder then that the nobles, if that's the way they thought about themselves, they thought working in the ecclesia and hauling stones and making mortar and putting stones, that was beneath them, right? Majestic, magnificent me. You build the walls so that I can dwell in them. That's their attitude, right? And you will build the wall exactly as I see fit, and I'm going to inspect all your work. That was the attitude of the nobles. Well, what about Rephaiah? Rephaiah was, if you look at verse 9, and Rephaiah is the first one in Nehemiah chapter 3 that is identified as a working ruler. So Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 9, it says, "Next unto them repaired Rephaiah the son of Hur, the ruler of the half part of Jerusalem." So Rephaiah was the first ruler who became a mason. In verse 12, Haloasheph became a ruler, was a ruler who became a mason. In verse 14, at the end of the verse, it says Rechab, the ruler of the part of Beth Hakkerem. Then in verse 15, there's Shalom, the ruler of part of Mizpah. In verse 16, there's Nehemiah the son of Akbuk, the ruler of the half part of Beth Zur. There's the ruler of the half part of Keilah in verse 17. There's the ruler of the half part of Keilah again in verse 18. And then there's the ruler of Mizpah in verse 19. And so if you highlighted all those word rulers, you begin to see a theme there in Nehemiah chapter 3, which emphasizes the point that it doesn't matter what our occupation is. Even if you're a ruler in the land and have people underneath you, when you come through the door of the ecclesia, you're nothing but a mason. And we're all masons and we work side by side. Doesn't matter whether you're a ruler or not outside of the ecclesia. Now let's go down to verse 10. Let's look at this man, Jedaiah. Now, it says there in verse 10 of Nehemiah chapter 3, and I'll flip the side here. Or Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 10, "Next unto them repaired Jedaiah, the son of Harumaph, even over against his house." So it doesn't really say anything special about Jedaiah there, does it? Right? This is the individual in the ecclesia that, you know, goes about his job very quietly, looks after the library, you know, perhaps the caretaker in the ecclesia, perhaps put the ecclesial schedule together, you know, perhaps coordinates the sisters in the kitchen, whoever that individual might be. This is the Jedaiah that's working behind the scenes. He is the backbone of the ecclesia, right? Doesn't say too much about him in Nehemiah chapter 3. But turn, if you will, to Zechariah chapter 6. Zechariah chapter 6 says that Jedaiah is going to receive a crown in the building of the future temple. Zechariah chapter 6. And we begin to read there at verse 10. It says there, "And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Take of them of the captivity, even of Haldai of Tobijah, and of Jedaiah, which are come from Babylon." So there's Jedaiah, right? "And come thou the same day and go into the house of Josiah, the son of Zephaniah. Then take silver and gold and make crowns, and set them upon the head of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest. And speak unto him, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, Behold the man whose name is the branch. And he shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of the Lord. Even he shall build the temple of the Lord, and he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne. And he shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both." So it's obviously future, right? It's talking about the man whose name is the branch coming back to build the temple. And look at what it says in verse 14. "And the crowns shall be to Helam, and to Tobijah, and to Jedaiah, and to Hen the son of Zephaniah, for a memorial in the temple of the Lord." And so there's Jedaiah, quietly going about, doing the work of a mason in the ecclesia, who will be crowned in the temple that the branch will build in Zechariah chapter 6. So I think we have time for one more individual. Let's look at Shalom in verse 12 of Nehemiah chapter 3. And for those of you who are single parents, for those of you who know single parents in the truth, take special note of this man, Shalom, in verse 12. "And next unto him repaired Shalom, the son of Halohesh, the ruler of the half part of Jerusalem, he and his daughters." You know, it could have just ended that he and his daughters could have been left off that verse, and we would have thought nothing else about Shalom. But for some reason, it says here that he and his daughters were working together to repair this section of the wall. And why is that? Why does it say Shallum and his daughters? Well, we need to go back to Ezra. Turn, if you will, back to Ezra chapter 10. So in Ezra chapter 10, we have here Ezra reforming all the people that were coming back. If you look at verse 1, now when Ezra had prayed, and when he confessed, weeping and casting himself down before the house of God, there assembled unto him out of Israel a very great congregation of men and women and children, for the people wept very sore. And Shechaniah, the son of Jael, one of the sons of Elam, answered and said unto Ezra, we have trespassed against our God, and have taken strange wives of the people of the land, yet now there is hope in Israel concerning this thing. And so Ezra instructs them here in Ezra chapter 10. He says, go, verse 3, and make a covenant with our God to put away all the wives and such as are born of them according to the counsel of my Lord and those that tremble at the commandment of our God, and let it be done according to the law. So he says, those of you who have taken strange wives, leave them behind and go back to Jerusalem and start afresh. And so one of the ones in Ezra chapter 10 that left their wives behind was this man, Shallum. And it says that if you look at verse 24 of Ezra chapter 10, it says, of the singers also, Eliashib, and of the porters, Shallum, and Telem, and Uri. So he was one of the ones, he was a single parent, he had left his wife behind in Babylon, right? He had married a wife of Babylon, and Ezra says, you know what, if they're not, and he doesn't say this in Ezra, but if they're not willing to come with you and serve the God that you serve, leave them behind and come and start afresh in Jerusalem. And then look at what it says in verse 44. It says, all these had taken strange wives, and some of them had wives by whom they had children. Shallum left his wife behind, but his daughters came with him. And there was Shallum as a single parent in the ecclesia, building the wall with his daughters, performing the work of a mason in the ecclesia. And so, brethren and sisters, we could talk about Malchiah the Rechabite. We could talk about Baruch. In Baruch, in verse 20, it says that he earnestly repaired. Here was a brother that was on fire. He was zealous for the working of the truth and for the work of the ecclesia. We could talk about the Nethinims, who were menial laborers that were assigned to work and serve in the temple. And there they were, still hundreds of years later, helping to come back and build the wall. 600 of them came back from Babylon and were helping to build the wall of Jerusalem. And it's a great story when you look at all the names in Nehemiah chapter 3. You look at all the names and the stories behind them and how the ecclesia was made up in Jerusalem. And there are counterparts in our ecclesia today for everyone in Nehemiah chapter 3. We all have the same issues. The issues they were going through were no different than the ones that we were going through, that we go through. And yet there they were building the wall of the ecclesia together. Brethren and sisters, we are laborers together in the ecclesia with God as masons, building the wall. Brothers and sisters, let us make sure that we're engaged in the work of being a mason. Let's make sure that we are building solid foundations. Let's make sure that there are no gaps or holes in our ecclesial walls. Let's make sure that everyone has a job, a meaningful job in the ecclesia. Let's make sure, brothers and sisters, that our work in the ecclesia is not for looks, that it's not a facade, but that we're genuinely concerned for our brethren and sisters and the spiritual well-being of each other. Because hopefully, brethren and sisters, we'll be laborers together with God, not only now, but in the building with Jediah of that temple which is to come.